As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
Well, the sun is rising over Missouri, folks. It's time once again for a show me showdown. We got breakfast on the table all across America, coffee brewing on the stove, and there's a revolution in the air. Be a part of it. Welcome to Monday, October the 5th, 2009, two-hour broadcast to become vocal local, coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Yes, my name is William Roberts, and I've got good news. Hard facts, certainly a lot of that. Not much news on the plate today. And we might even talk about solutions. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, you're definitely in the right place at the right time to become vocal local. This is the home of philosophical radicalism. We're going to serve up a big plate full of philosophical radicalism today, where freedom is popular and remains the best hope for America. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game, and to be a part of today's broadcast, you can pick up the phone, call throughout the broadcast for those with unlimited long-distance access or in the Austin, Texas area. You may call in at 512-904-8014 to join me live on air. And from around America and around the world, you can call in toll-free at 866-841-1065, and your calls are welcome. And you may also send your ideas for guests and show topics, news to me via email at bvlhost@centurytel.net. That's the email address, folks, bvlhost@centurytel.net. Always glad to get your emails. And for those without Internet access listening by any of our affiliate stations and micro-broadcasters, you too can be a part of it. Simply send your letters to me at William Roberts Post Office, Box 96, out of Exeter, Missouri, 65647. Again, that's Box 96, Exeter, Mo, 65647. Big shout out this morning to Liberty Radio Owensville, Missouri, Micro 1650 AM Buffalo, and 94.3 Elgin, Texas. Thank you, gentlemen, for broadcasting. Become vocal local to your local listening audiences. The listener call-in number here remains 866-841-1065, and of course, your calls are welcome. Gold is treading carefully right about $1,000. The market is rather uneasy this morning, if you could say that. Finding new normals in a weakening U.S. dollar global economy. Not going to talk about the finances too much today. Kind of have a grab bag of topics as I clean up my desktop. Lots of topics and things I've been studying the last couple of weeks I wanted to share with you. That's where we're going to go today. Of course, we'll take your calls and much, much more. Let's go to that market report for Monday, October the 5th, 2009, active trading out of New York City as of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Gold trading up 60 cents at $1,002.90 an ounce. Silver down at $16.16 an ounce, up 2 cents on early morning trading. That's your 2 cents worth, right? Now here's mine. Platinum off a dollar, trading at $1,278 a troy ounce. Palladium Up a buck, down a buck, the way it goes, trading at $296 an ounce. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market so far this morning, $1,000.90 for a low, $1,008.50 for a high. At $1,002.90, your gold is up $168 an ounce year to year for a 20.12% return on your investment. Whoever says that gold doesn't pay you anything has never really studied the market. Misinformation agents, to be sure, but they sell newsletters. London, actually, that guy gives his newsletter away. London Gold Fix this morning, AM. The boys in London set the price of gold at $1,004.25. $1,004.25. You can see we're trading a buck below that now. In Friday's trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed off 22 points at 9488. The NASDAQ was off 9 at 2048. The S&P losing 5, trading at 1025. The crude oil off 88 cents in morning trading right now, standing at $69.07 a barrel for that light sweet crude. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest and dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Monday morning, October the 5th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Going back and finishing up this market report for Monday, October the 5th, 2009, out of New York City, 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, we found gold trading up 60 cents so far in morning trading at $1,002.90 an ounce, and silver up 2 cents at $16.16 a troy ounce. Dropping down a little further, we closed out the last segment with crude oil up off 0.88 cents, losing 88 cents in early morning trading, trading at $69.07. Where's that $80-$90 crude we heard about months ago? Well, I guess it just didn't happen. The U.S. dollar index losing 12 basis points, trading at 76.92. That's impacting the global marketplace considerably. Much on that on the web. We're not going to talk too much about financial news. However, this morning, the foreign exchange rates, the Canadian dollar moving up a little bit against this weakening U.S. dollar, 0.42 basis or percent or basis points, 42 basis points, trading at $93.93, almost flat, 93 cents. The Mexican peso just hanging on to 7 cent mark there, moving up 0.8% or 8 basis points in morning trading. The euro moves up 29 basis points, kind of thumbing its nose at the U.S. dollar again, trading at $1.46 U.S. The British pound loses 18 basis points, trading at $1.59. Then the Swiss franc, still strong, moving up again 7 basis points, 7 basis points again, now trading at 97 cents U.S. is just 3 points away from parity with the U.S. dollar. In the bond market, the yield, lots of talk in the news this morning. I'm not going to go there. Find it rather dismally boring. Lots of apologizing going on. The apologists, the financial apologists are all over the web this morning. But the bond market, the two-year bond, is trading at 0.86%, which is, I guess, a really good deal. Oh, yeah. That's what Timmy said, little Timmy Geithner. It's a really good deal. A lot of people are going to go out there and buy bonds, I guess, at 0.86%. The 10-year bond's trading at 3.19%, also supposedly a really good deal. And the 30-year is at 3.98%. Now, it's definitely not a bad deal in that it's below 4%. So I guess it's a good deal if you want to get involved with the free money program and secure some assets and lose only a little bit more than you would ordinarily lose if you were involved in the stock market. But, well, what can I say? Institutional buyers, you know, are going to be picking up these bonds. Lots on that, by the way, this morning. Lengthy articles. You might go take a look at it. This 0.86% return on the two-year bond is causing a little bit of a verbal storm. In the mortgage markets, the mortgages, 15-year mortgage continues to decline in the rate. Makes it more affordable for you to buy something on time. 15-year mortgage is, in my opinion, far preferable to a 30-year mortgage. When you're buying a house, you might as well get the payments out of the way as quickly as you can so that you can devote more money to paying for your property taxes and for your interest and for other things like that. Anyway, the 15-year trading at 4.60%, down from 4.70 a month ago. The 30-year, 5.13%, down from 5.26. So those mortgages just get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And we've seen some houses selling around here in southwest Missouri. If you're needing a house, you might want to look outside of the city. There's certainly houses for sale, and the market seems to be moving very slowly, but moving nonetheless here in sunny southwest Missouri. Lots of stuff, lots of places we could go. Kind of hard to decide where I really want to go. I think I'll start out with this one. I've got piles and stacks of research that I've been pulling out of my library. I've got most of my library on the floor scattered out all around in the living room, just kind of moving from stack to books to stack of books. Been studying the Reformation period again. It's important to me. It's important because there's such a tremendous parallel between the time when we moved from the old world order into the new world order back on October the 31st of 1517, when Martin Luther, the great German theologian, nailed his thesis to the door of the Wittenberg Church. Lots happening at that time period. But anyway, my research has taken me in some rather interesting places lately. But I found this little article, just thought I'd share it with you. The Order of St. John. Well, what is the Order of St. John? It's a military religious order of medieval origin. The Knights Hospitallers of St. John, subsequently known as the Knights of Rhodes, and lastly as the Knights of Malta, were once a great power in Christian Europe. Once a great power, past tense discovery here. The origin of the order is unknown, but probably it was early in the history that a rich merchant of Amalfi built not far from the Holy Sepulchre at Jerusalem a certain monastery known as Santa Maria de Latina, with a monastery for monks under the rule of Saint Benedict and a hospital for pilgrims. Pilgrim. The first patron of the order seems to have been Saint John, the compassionate patriarch of Alexandria in the 7th century. Afterwards, the Benedictine brethren, afterwards, St. John the Baptist was chosen the patron, and the Benedictine brethren assumed the title of Johnites, or Brothers Hospitallers of St. John. Bet you didn't know that. Pope Paschalis II in 1113 gave them the privilege of electing their own rector. Rector, not rectal. Later, in the addition to the vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience, they were pledged to make war on the infidels. Sound familiar? Pledging to make war on the infidels. A black cloak with a white cross on the left side was their symbol. The members were divided into three classes: knights of noble birth, the fighting class, priests bound to service of the church, and the brethren of service who took care of the sick and acted as guides to the pilgrims. Pilgrim. In 1291, the order was driven from Palestina by the conquests of the Saracens, and after holding Cyprus for a time, they occupied Rhodes, you know, Cecil Rhodes, in 1309, from which they were ultimately driven by Sultan Suleiman II in 1522. After the knights retired to Candia, not Canada, but Candia, sounded like Candyland, and other places, but finally to Malta, where Charles V granted them in 1530. Here, they continued to be a bulwark of Western Europe against the Turkish navies till modern times. The chief of this order, which had great possessions in almost every part of the Europe, was called the Grand Master of the Holy Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem and Guardian of the Army of Jesus Christ. Curious. How would you like to have to sign that? Write that out underneath your signature every time. The Grand Master of the Holy Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem and Guardian of the Army of Jesus Christos. He lived at Valletta in the island of Malta. The military duty of the knights consisted in taking the field at least three times against the Turks or the pirates of Barbary. Well, that ties in, doesn't it? The Barbary Coast. We'll be right back. Stay with us right after this commercial intermission.
Heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. EngineBrain.com. EngineBrain.com.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune. Many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Thank you.
And we have returned once again, just closing out this little brief commentary on the Order of St. John, Knights of Malta, if you will. It goes this way. The military duty, again, of the Knights consisted in taking the field at least three times against the Turks, or the pirates of Barbary. In war, they wore a red jacket, or a tabard, charged with a white cross. In other words, with a white cross emblem attached to it. Red jackets, white crosses. That's like the Red Cross, only in reverse. In 1798, Malta was unexpectedly attacked by Bonaparte. That would be Napoleon Bonaparte, no doubt. And about the same time, the extensive properties belonging to the order in various countries were confiscated, 1798. This may be considered the end of the order as a vital institution, although shortly after the capture of Malta, Paul I, who had been chosen Grand Master, took the order under his protection, and it still exists, nominally, at least. After the death of Paul, the nomination of the head of the order was vested in the Pope of Rome. So, gives you a little background there. We've been talking about this sort of stuff quite a bit on Wednesdays with our guest and returning guest, Daryl Eberhardt, which leads me on into more and more studies with this whole idea about the masters, master blasters, the masters of the universe. Intriguing. Indeed. Some discussion over the weekend, various places. Why? Why was the G20 held in Pittsburgh? Well, speculation can run rampant. Maybe they had a good strawberry cheesecake or something. I don't know. Had a good room rate or something. But let's find out a little bit about Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, just briefly. After all, as we knew, there was going to be another meeting, this one, the G7, over in Istanbul, almost immediately following the G20 summit in Pittsburgh. As I shared with you then, the idea of establishing a larger group under a smaller group, under a hidden group, is old school tricks, if you will, in the corporate world. When you have corporations, the originators, the founders, oft times are overwhelmed by clamoring stockholders and people who have an interest, a vested interest in the corporation for representation, and so they make available a board of directors, and then a group comes together, and so that might be the G7. Then after a time, more people clamor and clamor for a little bit of time in the sunshine, and so you expand the group to 20 or something, the G20. But the G7, of course, just goes back to all things as usual, letting the G20 take the heat globally as the G7 meets in Istanbul. Of course, there's still the G-O goddamn too high and holy that hide behind the scenes, that are the puppet masters, of course, for the G7. But we don't talk about that in the news. I certainly couldn't name the names of the wire pullers, but we know they must exist. But anyway, Pittsburgh, why would they meet there? Well, it has rather interesting stuff going on there, really. Again, out of the encyclopedia, simple enough. It's a metropolis, of course, a metropolitan area. Metropolitans, of course, you can find that in the church. The metropolis. You wouldn't expect to see Batman and Robin hanging out there, but the metropolis of the Ohio Valley is the second largest city in the state, and it's the seat of Allegheny County. Doesn't make any difference, does it? And a river port, that does, located at the junction of the Allegheny and the Monongahela Rivers, which here unite to form the Ohio in latitude 40-27 north. Of course, there's nothing esoteric about that. It's not 30-30-30 or 36-36-32. Well, you get the idea. The climate of Pittsburgh is temperate, but sudden, sharp changes in temperature, not unusual. The average precipitation, well, none of that really makes any difference, but this does. The business center, called the Golden Triangle, occupies the angle formed by the confluence of the two rivers. You see, we have a triangle here. The Golden Triangle. Its altitude is 740 feet above sea level, extending for miles in every direction from this center. Vast industrial plants and great residential sections have been built. Within the city limits, hills rise to more than 1,200 feet, so it's got quite a bit of vertical gain there. The north side of Pittsburgh, formerly the city of Allegheny, occupies a relatively low and level tract along the Allegheny and Ohio rivers. This area is flanked to the west of the Allegheny River, to the north by lofty heights and so on and so forth. On the south side of the Monongahela rises Mount Washington. The walls of the canyon of the Monongahela recede sufficiently to permit location upon level ground of that part of the city which was once the borough of Birmingham, but which is commonly known as the South Side. Gets more interesting as it goes along. Remember, though, we have this golden triangle there. The downtown section is connected with its populous East and End districts by Bigelow Boulevard, Boulevard of the Allies, and a number of thoroughfares with the street railway lines. On the triangle itself, the main business streets converge upon Liberty Avenue, which parallels the Allegheny. So we have a golden triangle, and we have Liberty Avenue. Because of its many industrial furnaces, all burning soft coal, Pittsburgh used to be known as the Smoky City, capital S, capital C, Smoky City. Abatement measures taken in recent years, this article published in the 1950s, have made the nickname obsolete. But the glowing furnaces, which led James Parton, the historian, to call it hell with the lid off, still flare against the night sky. The city today is generally called the Iron City or the Steel City, because of the long predominance of those industries. Of course, it's hell with the lid off. It used to be called the Smoky City. Smoke abatement measures were successful in transforming that city from the Steel City to something else. But again, it's just only too convenient that this was the format opening up the dialogue of the G20 for their meeting coming up in Copenhagen, if you will, about the H.R. 2450 for the Clean Energy and Security Act and establishing the global climate, man-made global warming and climate cap-and-trade financial system, basically buying and selling carbon credits. You couldn't get anything more carbony than the Smoky City. So that might have had something to do with it, but that's certainly not all. There's a lot of mining and manufacturing around there. But it's interesting to note that social welfare, etc., is concerned, this is a pretty notable city. In that Pittsburgh has about 30, and this was back in the 50s here now, about 30 foundations and charitable trusts created to promote social betterment. In other words, the good of the whole, if you will. Social betterment. We'll get into that in a moment here. But one of these is the Buell Foundation, established in 1928. All of this idea about social betterment, economic progress, intellectual advance. The Buell Foundation, established in 1928, Chatham Village, the moderate rent garden community on Mount Washington. That's one of those sustainable community things, Chatham Village, the moderate rent. This is rent control, probably. In 1939, the same foundation presented a planetarium to the city, the Buell Planetarium. Let's all go study the stars, right? The Maurice and Laura Falk Foundation began its work of promoting economic progress there in 1930. In 1937, the foundation granted $300,000 to Carnegie Institute of Technology. Well, I guess we'll just have to pick this one up on the other side. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monkey is a book of profound importance that helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day Books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail, and it's a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
So we get our minds wrapped around this idea of Pittsburgh as a center for some of these great foundations. Of course, if you want to find out more about the foundations and their power and their influence, you might study Rene Wurmser's writing of the same title on that subject, give you some pretty good insight as to just what powerful entities these various and sundry foundations are. But let's continue along here. It says the in 1937 the foundation granted $300,000 to the Carnegie Institute of Technology for the endowment of a professorship of social relations to develop a program of education in the relation of science and technology to society. What is the relation of science and technology to society? Well, that kind of harkens back to the time of the Reformation again. We'll cover that in a minute later in the broadcast again. But let's put a little bit more in this. The Henry C. Frick Educational Commission grants scholarships for summer study to public school teachers of Pittsburgh in 1950. Carnegie Institute of Technology was planning a new business, a new building for the Graduate School of Industrial Administration as a result of a gift from the M.L. and Mary T. Mellon Foundation, with a gift from the A.W. Mellon Education and Charitable Trust, was enabling the University of Pittsburgh to start a school of public health. Public health, let's see, Catherine Sebelius, Pittsburgh, G20 meeting. All these things start to draw together. The Pittsburgh Foundation, created in 1945 by the Mellon National Bank, represents the union of different funds given at different times by different people for different purposes. Wow, that's a sentence. And exists primarily for those of lesser means who wish to make lasting gifts for philanthropic purposes. Ma and Pa America, those of lesser means, I guess, can contribute that way. In the Pittsburgh area, in 1950, there were 20 funds valued at $2.5 million, from which income approximating $100,000 was distributed in small grants to various fields of educational and charitable interests. Continuing, lots of stuff in here about the development of this city. Of course, there was a considerable amount of banking there as well. There's no doubt about that. Let's see, banking facilities. In 1949, Pittsburgh had 29 banks, national, state, savings, and trust companies, capitalized at $317 million, with deposits of more than $2.27 billion, and total resources of nearly $2.3 billion. In that year, the city ranked ninth in the United States in bank clearings. The oldest bank is the Farmers Deposit National Bank, established in 1832. The largest is the Mellon National Bank, with total deposits of $1,213,000 as of December the 31st of 1949. There's a lot more to it. And then there's the history of the area as well, going back and forth between the British and the French and the French and the British and the British and the militia, if you will, including George Washington, marching on the Fort Duquesne, or Duquesne, D-U-Q-U-E-S-N-E. The French involved very much in that area as well. General Forbes, Forbes magazine maybe, on November the 25th, 1758, General Forbes marched to the abandoned spot and raised the British flag, named the place Pittsburgh, honoring William Pitt, the first Earl of Chatham. Ever looked at William Pitt, the first Earl of Chatham? Rather interesting fellow, known first as the Elder Pitt and then as the Great Commoner. Of course, his kin was involved as well in English government. William Pitt, the son, English parliamentary orator and statesman, lots in that during the French Revolution and so on and so forth. Of course, there's the George Westinghouse Memorial in Schenley Park in Pittsburgh. Lots going on in Pittsburgh. It's kind of a place that, well, what can I say? It's the Golden Triangle. It's hell with the lid off. Take it any way you like. So, there's that and that. Here's an interesting one. You're going to come across these very wealthy people from time to time, people that just seem to be under the radar. Anybody ever heard about the Chigi family? A noble Italian family founded by Agostino Chigi, who died in 1520 of Siena. He didn't die of Siena, that's where he was from. He became a patron of the fine arts and a banker for the Pope. Peruzzi built for him the well-known Villa Farnese. Raphael painted there the Triumph of Galatea and the Legend of Psyche. Sodoma ornamented it with his fresco, The History of Alexander and Roxana, and more. But the family was further distinguished by five cardinals and one pope. Fabio Chigi, or Chigi, in 1652. Afterward, Alexander the Seventh. You know, we've been talking a little bit about Alexander the Sixth, the Borgia Pope. Flavio Chigi was born in 1810, died in February 15th of 1885, was one of the papal guard until 1848 when he was made Bishop of Myra in Partibus, nuncio at Munich, but was sent to Paris in 1873, later in the same year was made cardinal. But who are these Chigis? Very, very, very wealthy people, great bankers of the time. I don't know how many of you over the weekend did take the time to hit your browsers and find out a little bit more about Roman Abramovich. One very, very wealthy Jew in Russia. Makes for an interesting study, too. Don't know whether you've done that or not, but if you did, perhaps you were as profoundly influenced by the grandeur of that man's new yacht as I was. The thing looks like an ocean liner. But I guess if you've got billions and billions, he's got about $51 billion, supposedly, then I guess you could afford a yacht like that can hold your other yacht and your motor launch and your automobiles and your helicopters and just kind of deploy it any way you want to as you travel around the world. You know, it's going to be those kinds of people who will be the new feudal lords in this global serfdom. Lots and lots of material out there, for sure. But going back to this artistic theory, if you will, in Italy, this is a very unusual book. It was one of those finds, 1450 to 1600, Sir Anthony Blunt, Oxford paperbacks. There's just so much information in this little booklet. It only has 150-some pages, 160 pages. But what it really talks about here is it talks about the rise, if you will, of the secular humanist idea, the line of reason that led to the Reformation. Amazing, isn't it? You thought it was all about Luther? Luther is kind of like an also-ran in all of this. It started much earlier than that. But notice the time period, the 1450s to the 1600s. It embraces the discovery, if you will, of America and a new beginning, a new world order. And it's very, very interesting and revealing. But there was something going on in all of this. There was something that we had actions and reactions during this time period. We had the creation, of course, of the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits. How many have ever looked at their church, Gesu, the Church of Gesu, G-E-S-U. That's the holy name of Jesus, I guess. But there's a lot to all of this. There's a lot to this, but this particular little book brought to mind so many of the various and sundry people who were involved in creating what we might understand as the liberal arts. The liberal arts. Raising architects and sculptors and painters up from the level of mere craftsmen and guildsmen to the level of the hoity-toity, if you will. They became masters. Curious, the use of the terminology is the same, almost exactly, that you would find in the writings of the later Masons. Much of this is Freemasonry in origin. We talked a little bit about that last week. Very interesting. But it talks about all kinds of stuff in this interesting little book, but it comes from a different direction. Instead of just straight up history, it's the history of art in the time period, which is rather interesting because art and architecture was really, they were the patrons of artists and architects were these people like Chigi and others of fantastic and fabulous wealth at their time, the bankers in Florence and Venice, the rise of the Medicis and the conversion of the Florentine area into kind of a dictatorship, an autocratic thing. Everybody's heard of Niccolo Machiavelli. Of course, he was writing at that time period as well. We'll look into that a little bit more on the other side, maybe pick up something from John Stuart Mill. And of course, your calls are welcome at 866-841-1065.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest in dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at readyreservefoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. EngineBrain.com. EngineBrain.com.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
And we've returned once again. We're just going to play around a little bit with this so that we can get an idea of how the public opinion and cross currents of public opinion have the ability to shape history, law, of course, finance, geopolitical landscapes, if you will, public opinion, changing, things that change. We're at a time of change. You know, we're now in change. Again, back in change again. We crossed a threshold back 500 years ago that so drastically altered the layout of Western Europe and most of the world that we've only just now come to the end of the momentum that was set forward by that movement, and now we're heading into another one. You can stomach it if you're ready for it. The Rockefellers have been talking about it, the new world order. Lots of very interesting people, and sometimes the most unusual people have the ability to make incredible changes on the planet. Here's this fellow, Alberti is his name. Alberti was the illegitimate son of a Florentine merchant. He was born in 1404 in Genoa, where his father had moved after the decree of exile, which had been passed on the whole Alberti family. He was one of the richest and most powerful, the Alberti family. It's not perhaps the same as Albertsons, you know, but could be along that line. Alberti family, one of the richest and the most powerful in Florence. Florence, Italy. The Venetians, Venice, Florence, Florentines. And unusual and very important, oftentimes overlooked, part of our history. But he was educated in the north of Italy, principally in Bologna, that's like baloney, where he studied law. He seems to have gone to Florence in 1428. What's that got to do with today, Will? 1428, long time ago. Well, we'll find out. When the ban on his family had been lifted, which must have been of vital importance in his formation, it coincided with the end of that period when Florence was dominated by the big merchants. It coincided with the end of that period when Florence, Italy, was dominated by the big merchants, who had achieved a greater power than they had held for nearly a century. The rest of Alberti's life was spent for the most part either in Florence or following the papal court, tied up with the Pope of Rome, of course, in which he held a secretarial post from 1432 to 1464. Papal policy was at this period increasingly concentrated on central Italy and relied largely on the merchant class and its support. This is like the rise of mercantilism. Of course, mercantilism around the Mediterranean Sea had been going on for some time, quite some time. Greece, Athens, Sparta, the Phoenicians, the Carthaginians, all of that, hundreds and hundreds of years. But here, we see that the papal policy was at this period increasingly concentrated on central Italy and relied largely on the merchant class and its support. The outlook, too, in the papal circles was humanist in character, so that Alberti found there a similar atmosphere to that of his own city, Florence. In his width of knowledge, as well as in his rational and scientific approach, Alberti was typical of the early humanists. He worked apparently with equal ease in the fields of philosophy, science, classical learning, and the arts. He wrote pamphlets or treatises on ethics, love, religion, sociology. Of course, it wouldn't have been titled sociology at that time. That term was coined by Auguste Comte in the 1800s, but on sociology, on law, on mathematics, and different branches of the natural sciences. No dummy. He also wrote verses, and his intimacy with the classics was so great that two of his own works, a comedy and a dialogue in the matter of Lucian, were accepted as newly discovered writings of the ancients in the arts. He practiced and wrote about painting, sculpture, and architecture. Indeed, his grasp of all forms of learning was so encyclopedic that he well deserved the praise written by a contemporary copyist, which I have no way of pronouncing. It's in Latin. Alberti's views about the arts are also closely dependent on his general philosophical outlook or attitude. His outlook on life was precisely that of the humanist of the first half of the 15th century and corresponds to the conception of the city-state as it existed in Florence before the final triumph of Cosimo de Medici, the Medicis. For Alberti, the highest good is the public interest. Now, you know, we start the broadcast off every day. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness, then you're in the right place at the right time to become vocal local. I use that phrase with the intention that it would stir up your pure, your powerful, and your positive mind to do a little bit of research about that curious phrase inserted in the Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness. Curious phraseology, isn't it? But here, back in the middle of the Quattrocento, actually it would be the Cinquecento, the 15th century, the 1400s, for Alberti, the highest good is the public interest. To this, princes and individual citizens are equally bound. The highest good is the public interest, the greatest good of the greatest number. To this, princes and individuals, in Alberti's mind, are equally bound. The prince must govern in the interests of the citizens, preserve their liberties, and obey the laws of the city, or he becomes a tyrant. Curious. Curiouser and curiouser. Above all, the peace of the city must be preserved, and Alberti strongly condemns the factions, parties and factions, you know, the established two-party political system. Alberti strongly condemns the factions which arose civil strife and from which his own family had suffered so much. Those who hold office under the prince must equally seek the general good. The judge, for instance, whose functions Alberti discusses at length, must administer the law with firmness, but with moderation and humanity, so that public and private interest may be protected, but so that no greater suffering than is necessary may be inflicted on those who infringe the law. Some of his views on punishment are strangely modern, for though he admits the use of torture as a means of arriving at the truth, he attacks the bad prisons of his time and sets down the principle that prisons are intended to reform, not to destroy, the criminal, from which we, of course, get the idea of reformatories. Alberti is not a strict republican. In the fifth book of the Treatise on Architecture, he discusses the different forms of government, and though he approves strongly of the republic city, he does not exclude the idea of government by a prince. Calling to mind my revelation that I've shared with you before, there is an all-out war raging between legal positivism and the natural law. That in the rise of statism, the state has arrogated unto itself all of the natural law, returned as codified, statutory, regulated, privileges, licensable, taxable, and revocable. But what is this idea of the government by a prince? Well, that's truly what legal positivism is. Whatever the prince says as the force of law. And Alberti was aware of that. As a matter of fact, legal positivism dates from this time period and understanding it well. But provided that he governs in the interest of the city. We'll pick all that up. On the other side, as we begin hour two and continue this kind of an open mind, philosophically radical Monday. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds of thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network. the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Monday, October the 5th, 2009, live, coming to you live, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. We come to you live Monday through Friday right here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Yes, my name is William Roberts. I've got good news, hard facts, and as I like to say, workable solutions for you. Sometimes we have to derive solutions from the things we discuss on this broadcast. But it is also the home of philosophical radicalism. At least that's the way I like to style it. Philosophy sometimes helps us to understand. A study of philosophy sometimes helps us to understand the mind of the people that are actually running the planet right now. If we can understand some of their philosophical underpinnings, maybe we would be able to get in there and bore away at those underpinnings. Certainly shine the bright light of truth and reason in a most unreasonable world. But in our own ignorance, in our own arrogance, and in our own historical deficiency, sometimes we don't look back and see what went on in the background before we make decisions about the foreground, and then we just repeat errors over and over again. But anyway, looking at this fellow Alberti, long time ago, Florentine, at the time of the Medicis. Again, Alberti is not a strict Republican, but he definitely speaks of the, when he speaks of the public good, he does not mean the good of some abstract entity like, quote-unquote, the state. He means the good of all individual citizens who make up the state. Of course, we need to be very careful when we get around that word of citizen. The cits. At this time, there was still a considerable amount of slavery shaken everywhere. Not everyone was a citizen. It was a blessing bestowed upon you by birth or by some power greater than you. But again, the state was not meant some corporate entity. It was the good of all of the individuals who make up that state. Salus populi, suprema lex esto, the state motto for Missouri. The wealth or the health, salus populi, of the people is the supreme law of this state. Of course, you don't seem to quite live up to that, but it makes for a nice motto, doesn't it? Anyway, continuing along here, and he is therefore as much interested in the individual citizen as in the prince or those who govern for the prince. Remember, it's very difficult at this time to separate out the princes from the popes. As we mentioned, the Chigis, exceedingly wealthy family, Florentines, who then went on to be many cardinals and popes out of their own family. We talked a little bit about the Borgia Pope, Alexander VI. Might touch on him a bit more today as well, although we've got tons of stuff here, places to go. The first aim of the individual is to be a good citizen, that is to say, to serve his fellow citizens as far as possible. Again, back in the 1400s. He can only attain this end by the pursuit of virtue. That calls to mind Francis Hutcheson. Perhaps the founder of the concept of the pursuit of happiness, Francis Hutcheson. And it's to the methods of acquiring virtue that Alberti devotes most of his purely ethical writings. Well, we'll pick it all up with Alberti on the other side of this short commercial intermission. Stay with us. ¶¶
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail, and it's a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest in dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And so we can see by studying someone like this Alberti, we can then make two ties together with later thinkers, especially this guy Francis Hutcheson out of Scotland. His writing here that I've shared with you from several readings on air, an inquiry into the original of our ideas of beauty and virtue, Francis Hutcheson. This is where the idea of the pursuit of happiness was coming from, perhaps at the time of the founding of this country and the writing of our Declaration of Independence. But here we can find almost precisely the same concepts being laid out by Alberti and the rise of what would be the humanist movement, which would be Neoplatonism, New Plato, not neocons, but the Neoplatonists, that led into the turmoil that was known as the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation, which we've been discussing here on the broadcast with Daryl Eberhardt, and we'll continue to niggle around and twist and dig into these various missing gaps in history, just filling one in the way I like to do it with more detail today. But again, his rules then, Alberti, his rules can be summarized as follows. The individual must seek virtue by the application of the will. the use of reason, and by following nature. So you have these three forces, the will, the use of reason, and by following nature. Will supplies the driving force. A man, Alberti says, can achieve as much as he wishes to achieve. Whatever the mind of man can perceive, it can achieve. That was a line by Paul J. Meyer, the founder of the Success Motivation Institute out of Waco, Texas. Again, a man, he says, can achieve as much as he wishes to achieve. Will, the will to do, supplies that driving force. So it gets your feet to swing out of bed in the morning and drop onto the floor, even if you're a little late, as mine were this morning. Forgot to shake my old Big Ben clock, and I woke up naturally as opposed to suddenly by the alarm. Fortunately, in plenty of time for the broadcast, out of habit. A man, Alberti says, again, can achieve as much as he wishes to achieve, but it is only through reason that he can know what he should aim at and what he should avoid. All right? Obstacles and roadblocks. Goals and obstacles. Things that we should aim at and things to avoid. Finally, man must follow nature in the sense that he must know the end for which he was created and try to attain it. It's this idea that I advance periodically, knowing who you are and whose you are. He must discover why nature gave him certain faculties and develop them, unless he is sure that they are bad. So, for instance, Alberti believes that man must aim at spiritual good and not be bound by the senses and the passions. It wasn't until Auguste Comte and the positivists that we threw away all of the passions and became creatures of a five senses world on this idea of the division of labor and so much more that we could talk about at another time when we discover and study Auguste Comte. But continuing here from Alberti, he says, he again, and I reiterate, believes that man must aim at spiritual good and not be bound by the senses and the passions. He must be superior to material things and so be independent of fate. Independent of fate. Yet, he is strongly opposed to the extreme of Stoicism as represented by the cynicism of Diogenes, since he finds it contrary to nature. It is inhuman not to be moved by any emotions at all. What man needs is to be moderate in his feelings. That brings up Bonhomme, Benjamin Franklin, moderation in all things, and to enjoy the things of this world without being tied to them. The love of money being the root of all evil, money not the evil. The love of the money being the evil. In fact, the moderation, which is one of the results of following reason, is the most significant and often recurring feature of Alberti's doctrine. It leads to the calm of mind, which is for him a necessary condition of the right conduct of life. So we have the citizens and we have the slaves. We have those that are out there with their heads bent down and their back arched over and their elbows pumping, going for the miles and miles of beans with a hoe. And then we have the others, the archons, if you will, and the citizens who command there every day. And it all has a lot to do with choice. And there were choices being made at this particular time. There were choices being made at this particular time that opened up an entirely new way of thinking. This idea of the liberal arts. We'll find out a little bit more about that. The outstanding characteristic of Alberti's view of life is this rationalism, based more on ancient philosophy than on the teachings of Catholicism. But this does not imply that he was opposed to Christianity. See, they distinguish between Catholicism and Christianity. On the contrary, he constantly pays his respects to it, but it is before a curious form of Christianity that he bows. A typical humanist religion in which the elements of pagan and classical philosophy blend without any difficulty with Christian dogmas, in which the churches are sometimes referred to as quote-unquote temples, and in which sometimes the gods, little g gods plural, seem to receive as much honor as the Christian God. Now, you'll find much of this in the writings of Auguste Comte. In his Catechism of the Universal Religion of Humanity, in his System of Positive Philosophy, and his System of Positive Polity, written about 400 years after Alberti. With this humanized religion, Alberti feels himself entirely at home, but he will not give up his right to individual judgment on every matter. Even the ancients, for whom he has a deeper reverence than for any other persons, human or divine, he treats on a level and does not feel himself obliged to follow either their precept or their example if his own judgment tells him otherwise. My will versus thy will. I, thou, I, it. Martin Buber. Pure love. Hey. Oh.
You heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle. Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. EngineBrain.com. EngineBrain.com.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune. Any of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't.
So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
And we find ourselves moving forward in time a little bit to a time period years removed from the previous, when this fellow Alberti, again Florentine, from one of the wealthiest families in Florence, advances his philosophies, evolving this new philosophy, he's creating this new idea, a really big idea, which is going to produce a new world order. Of course, there are other players. But, continuing from this text, it says again, but when he came into contact with Florentine society in the last years of his life, between 1464 and 1472, he, Alberti, that is, found that life and culture there had changed. The Medici were now in complete control of the city, and under their autocratic rule, life had grown more luxurious. Men's philosophy, too, had changed, for Florentine culture of the later Quattrocento, or the 14th century, was dominated by the Neoplatonists, the new Platoists, led by Marsilio Ficino and Pico della Mirandola. And if you've never studied either of those two fellows, you might want to punch them into your browser. Marsilio Ficino, F-I-C-I-N-O, and Pico, P-I-C-O, Della, D-E-L-L-A, Mirandola, M-I-R-A-N-D-O-L-A. Alberti's relation to Platonism is somewhat complex. Many of the fundamental ideas in his philosophy are ultimately Platonic in origin, and Alberti very likely derived from the Florentine followers of Plato in the 14th and early 15th centuries, such as Petrarch or Bruni. His faith in man and the human will, his doctrine of following nature, his conception of the prince, and many other of his opinions are to be traced in the writings of the early humanist admirers of Plato, such as Salutati. But by the end of the 15th century, the philosophy of the Platonists in Florence had entirely changed. Under the influence of Cosimo and Lorenzo di Medici, the Platonic Academy had developed, but it had tended to pay even more attention to the writings of the Alexandrian exponents of Plato than to the philosopher himself. Enter the mysteries. Ficino and Pico are soaked in mysticism derived partly from Platonius and partly from Oriental origins. This mystical Neoplatonism was encouraged by Lorenzo de' Medici, perhaps to some extent for political reasons. At any rate, it certainly served his ends. For the Neoplatonists at this time laid much more emphasis on the contemplative than on the active life, and it suits an autocrat to keep thinking men as far as possible out of active politics in order that he may enjoy his absolute power undisturbed. Which is why I advocate the idea of becoming vocal local. Knowledge is indeed power, and powerful. But it really only attains that power when it's combined with action. It's not enough. Nor is it sufficient to just know a thing. We must act on the things that we know. Otherwise, we just fall into the same repeating story of Lorenzo de' Medici, who understood that it suits an autocrat to keep thinking men as far as possible out of active politics in order that he may enjoy his absolute power undisturbed. Power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Undisturbed power. And dropping down a little further here, nothing could be less mystical than Alberti's way of thought, however. He believed above all in the importance of the active life and thought that the citizens should contribute tangibly and materially to the good of the city, becoming vocal, local. Indeed, the Florentines of the late 1460s, Alberti must have seemed a relic of the heroic period of 30 years before. In his last work, he condemns the luxury of the city and attacks the Medici almost openly, saying that the great power awakens vices in a man. We see that happening now. As more power is concentrated in fewer and fewer hands, like Roman Abramovich, and it awakens the vices in a man, and reminding them that the prince is subject to the laws of the city and must preserve its liberties. Seems that we've drifted off that course. Now we could drop down a little bit more. Of course, rationalism comes into all of this, his scientific method, his complete faith in nature, but it's going to have an impact on others. I'm going to pass over the rather lengthy piece on Leonardo da Vinci. We all know who Leonardo da Vinci is, right? But there was another fellow out there. His name was Savonarola. Savonarola was not so enamored with the kind of art. He kind of an iconoclast. He was not so enamored with the kind of art that was coming on the scene in those days, the obsession with nude sculpture and nude paintings. Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo and Raphael and the others. But here, let's just pick it up in the middle of a discussion of who this Savonarola is. It is not surprising that Savonarola's views, again, we're talking about Florence, Florentine time, the Medici's time period, Niccolo Machiavello, the prince, Machiavellian, the prince. It is not surprising that Savonarola's views on art should be almost medieval. The Dark Ages. Almost like blinders clamped on the people's minds for hundreds of years. This was the beginning of the Enlightenment. This was the beginning of the Renaissance. This was the beginning of the awakening period that we're discussing this morning. It is not surprising that Savonarola's views on art should be almost medieval. The whole basis of his work and teaching was a protest against the worldly and capitalist papacy of Alexander VI. We've spoken about Alexander VI a little bit. Here's some more. This is out of a more modern encyclopedia, the World Book Encyclopedia, Field Enterprises, published back in the 70s, if my memory serves me right, 1968. This is a very important person we're talking about when we discuss Alexander VI, and listen to the very brief encyclopedia article here. Alexander VI, from 1430 to 1503, was elected Pope in 1492, and Cristobal Colomb was sailing the ocean blue. Two noteworthy events occurred during his papacy. Girolamo Savonarola, the great Dominican preacher of Florence, Italy, openly and vigorously criticized Alexander in his sermons. For this, Alexander had him excommunicated and then, through his legates, sentenced him in 1498 to be hanged and burned. Alexander, in 1493, tried to prevent disputes between Spain and Portugal over the ownership of the newly discovered lands. Notice he doesn't say where those newly discovered lands are. And then the article continues and concludes this way. He drew an imaginary line that divided the disputed lands. See, the line of demarcation. I bet we could have a contest and not one caller could call in with the correct answer. What is meant by the line of demarcation? Alexander was born Rodrigo Lancol near Valencia, Spain. His uncle, Pope Calixtus III, adopted him. Two of Alexander's children were Lucrezia and Caesar Borgia. Lucrezia and Caesar Borgia. You've perhaps heard of them. We'll be back right on the other side of this break with your calls and much more.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can meet countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monkey is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic food,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And so you can see that it's not always acceptable to come up against the Pope or the Papa or the Papacy or government or state or any of that. Take a view of a conservative view. Here, Savonarola would be our conservative, whereas others such as Leonardo da Vinci and Alberti and Pico della Mirandola and Michelangelo and Raphael, they would be the liberals, if we wanted to use the left-right paradigm that we've been fed all of our lives here in America. But the whole basis of his work and teaching was a protest against the worldly and capitalist papacy of Alexander VI, and an attempt to restore something of the purity, restore, you see, restoration, conservative, conserving, restoring, something of the purity which he associated with medieval life and doctrine. What did happen during the Dark Ages that has been hidden in history? At the same time, his preaching was directed towards the artisan classes and not to the feudal aristocracy, which, with the upper middle classes, opposed his efforts. Again, directing his comment towards the artisans. His conception of beauty is based on the assumption that the spiritual is superior to the material. Perfect beauty resides in God, and below him, capital H, in varying degrees comes the beauty of the saints, the soul of man, and the body. Some of Savonarola's definitions are like those of St. Thomas. Beauty lies in proportion in the harmony of forms and colors. Others are more Neoplatonic. The beauty of simple things consists in, capital L, light. Seeking the light, more and more light, as the fellow travelers proceed from west to east, seeking more light. The Masons. Since the forms of all created things proceed ultimately from God, beauty in the material world is a reflection of the divine, and on about Savonarola, back to Alexander the Sixth, the Pope. Very important time right here. But Alexander the Sixth was born on January the 1st of 1431 at Extavia, near Valencia in Spain, Spanish Pope. We have a Spanish Black Pope now. He called himself Rodrigo Borgia, after his maternal uncle, Alfonso Borgia, but if you look at them, there's hardly any similarity. Alexander the Sixth here called himself Rodrigo Borgia. That's like calling yourself Barack Hussein Obama. He called himself. But Alfonso Borgia later became Pope Calixtus III. With his uncle's aid, he rose rapidly in the church and amassed a large personal fortune. By his Italian mistress, Vanosa, he had four children, including his son Giovanni and Caesar, and his daughter Lucretia, all of whom later played important parts in the scheme. Notice only four children are named. Now I'm referring to the Universal World Reference Encyclopedia published in 1955. In 1492, he, that would be Alexander the Sixth, soon to be Pope, he bought his election as a Pope. Of course, there's nothing new about that. Many of the popes bought their election, just as Barry the Usurper's supporters bought his election. And Rome became a kind of lawless carnival city. Not sound familiar? Licentiousness and art flourishing side by side under Alexander's open-handed patronage. Michelangelo and Raphael created masterpieces for him, while Spanish bravos and criminals roamed the streets of Rome. Alexander himself led an openly dissolute life, and boy, what a dissolute life he led. His favorite mistress at the time being the beautiful Giulia Farnese, the wife of a member of the Orsini family, taking another man's wife as a mistress. This, the vicar of Christ on earth and the Holy See. Yet pleasure did not dull Alexander's ambition or his awareness of difficult problems. His powers were rivaled by those of influential Italian families such as Orsini, the Sforza, and the Colonna, and shared by a number of quasi-independent petty rulers of the Papal States around Rome. They were threatened from abroad by France and Aragon, rivals for the Kingdom of Naples and southern Italy. Alexander's policy, shallow and dangerous but cunningly executed, was to ally himself with one side, now with the other, and regularly play them off against each other. Does that sound familiar, my friends? Seems like the Rothschilds have taken a page out of the Borgia Pope playbook. In 1493, he proclaimed the line of demarcation, separating Spanish and Portuguese claims in the New World Columbus had discovered, you see. That's why I have a variety and a collection of these encyclopedias, because each one seems to build where the other fails. And the articles are more and more informative the older they are. and more abbreviated, the newer they are. A very serious crisis came in 1494 when Charles VIII of France led an army into Italy to seize Naples. The Pope, who had originally supported Charles against Ferdinand of Aragon, now turned against him and recognized Ferdinand's son as King of Naples. Charles took Rome, but Alexander maintained his position and saved the treasures of the church. And some say that the Rothschilds are the guardians of the Vatican treasury. Who saved what is to be questioned. Then Alexander joined in a league against Charles, whose forces, after capturing the city of Naples, were forced to retreat. Yet, at a later date, Alexander supported their claims laid to Naples by Charles' successor, Louis XII. Alexander took every opportunity to advance the fortunes of his children. Giovanni became Duke of Gania. Caesar, the Archbishop of Valencia, very holy people these. Lucretia was forced into a series of marriages which generally ended in annulment or the death of the husband, underline that, when they were no longer advantageous. During one short period, she served as Pope Regent for her father. On June the 14th, 1497, Giovanni was murdered. Suspicion pointed to his brother Caesar, yes. Several people saw someone throwing Giovanni into the river there, the canal, and it looked surprisingly like his brother, who from this date became the dominant Borgia, quite overshadowing his father in brilliance and ruthlessness. Alexander served as a tool, financing his son's campaign by a reckless expenditure of the papal treasury, augmented by means of continual confiscations. And this article in this encyclopedia states that he died of malaria on August the 18th of 1503. But that's not quite the end of that story. The Borgias were really popular in their court because of their licentiousness. And Lucretia and Caesar and all those folks, they came up with the idea of poisons. Poisoning everyone and anyone, and they basically, Caesar didn't die, but Alexander VI most certainly died of poison that he had prepared for someone else who got wise to it and had his steward switch the bottles of wine that the Borgias had brought for the occasion, and it was the Borgia Pope that turned black and had his skin just falling off of his body as he was quickly shoved and stuffed down into his crypt. I wouldn't say it was malaria. Anyway, what's important about all of this? Much. Because we're moving into this time period, which would be known as the Reformation, the great schism in the Catholic institution, the rise of Protestantism, Calvinism, of course, and Protestantism, Zwingli, Calvin, Luther. But there's also another character that I want to bring to your attention. His name is Johann Reuchlin, and we'll pick him up on the other side of this break. Stay with me.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest in dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. EngineBrain.com. EngineBrain.com.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
And we are back once again for our last segment of today's two-hour broadcast. Phones are remarkably quiet today. Must be fascinated by the things that we're discussing here, perhaps things you hadn't heard before on talk radio. But we find ourselves now looking at the social position of the artist. The social position of the artist. You know, you go to an art gallery, you go to an art opening, you know, and the artist trips around in his silken sandals and his silk clothes, and everyone fawns over them, you know. All the Hollywoods and things like that happens over and over again. It's been happening that way for a long time. But there was a shift that occurred at this time period back in history where they went from just the most rudimentary manual laborers to artistes. Picking it up right here, let's see, how shall we do it? Theoretical writers on painting in the 15th century searched out every instance in antiquity and in more recent times of favor shown to painters by kings or princes or popes. The greatest value was attributed to cases in which it could be found that a great man had actually practiced painting. In other words, think about how many children are born into these various and sundry wealthy families, these families with nobility, etc. Think how very many people are born into their families. And all of the illegitimate and bastard children that surround them. And they live their life with a silver spoon and an orifice and have little or nothing to do because they're not in line or don't dare express an interest to be in line for power or wealth. So they have little to do, and so some will take up painting, and some will take up sculpture. You know, we hear about the philanthropists, the various Rockefellers and Rothschilds in all of the various countries of the world practicing philanthropy, and so on. But sometimes they practiced painting, for the distinction between the liberal and mechanical arts was that the former, in other words, the liberal arts, were practiced by free men, the latter by slaves. And an art acquired much reflected glory from being practiced by a royal artist. There was an advantage. There was something to gain when a royal artist was involved in painting or sculpting. The idea previously being that mechanical arts was that done by slaves, and liberal arts were practiced by free men. In general, the author writes here, the principal aim of the artist in their claim to be regarded as liberal was to disassociate themselves from the craftsman. Right, this is a mental shift. A mental shift. And in their discussion on the subject, they make it their business to bring out all the intellectual elements in their arts. Oh, yeah. They'll go on and wax and wane pontificating on all of the esoteric and intellectual aspects of painting and sculpting. As we like to say, this people come into some possession of knowledge or skill or craft or trade or something, and they clamber up into this great wall, sandstone wall of life. They carve themselves out a niche for themselves, and they get inside of that niche, wall themselves in with language and skills, hang out their little shingle, and become specialists and artistes. This whole idea of liberal education, liberal arts education, is an idea of taking from the great pool of commonality, from the herd of the chattels, and raising up by training artistes, liberal peoples, libertines. In general, the author continues, the principal aim of the artist in their claim to be regarded as liberal, again, was to dissociate themselves from the craftsman, and in their discussions on the subject, they make it their business to bring out all of the intellectual elements of their art. In later 15th century theoretical writings, it becomes a commonplace that painting depends on a knowledge of mathematics and of different branches of learnings. Mathematics was included, repeating from what I discussed last week, in the narrow circle of the liberal arts. Now, there's some people that come together here in a most peculiar way on these Florentine Platonic academies in and around Rome and other places. Two very strangely mixed people come under the same tutor, educator, if you will. One, Michelangelo, most everyone knows. The other, Johann Reuchlin, few know. But Johann Reuchlin was instrumental in what became Lutheranism, Protestantism, no less than, really, Michelangelo's involvement in that as well. They went in different directions and in different locations. One stayed on, right under the nose of the popes, if you will, them being his patron, and practiced this new style of humanist art. The other went up to Austria, that area, Prussia, and practiced the art of Kabbalah and the writings of Hebrew, and making translations and expanding the knowledge of Hebrew in that time period where he was. Very influential individual. You might Google him up and study a little bit about who is Johann Reuchlin. What did he write? Who did he influence? And then also look at his, I believe his nephew, named Philip Melanchthon, but like Borgia, both Johann Reuchlin and Philip Melanchthon were operating under assumed names, many do. But it was Philip Melanchthon who traveled to Augsburg while Martin Luther was under house arrest and wrote most of what is known as the Augsburg Confession. Who then do people follow when they follow Lutheranism? The Kabbalah? The Hebrews? Question for you to study. Okay, so anyway, we've got some very important things happening here. At the same time period, we go into this very profound Reformation, where the power of the Pope is being replaced by the power of the people with a vernacular Bible, and as a reaction to that, the rise then, the introduction of what will be known as the Jesuits, the Society of Jesus, the Jesuit order, Gesu. This is the Counter-Reformation. You have revolutions and you have counter-revolutions. And so throughout this period, in the rise of the Renaissance, people were coming to understand nature and will and reason and science and perspective and the pyramid and much more. And the same influences influenced the Protestants. And then in order to preserve the institution of the Holy Roman Empire, the Holy Roman Catholic Church, the Counter-Reformation came into play with the Jesuits. And we went into this period that we've discussed at great length about the various inquisitions and the various genocides, the burning of heretics, etc. Kind of a social cleansing of France and Spain and elsewhere. A very important time period, much the same as the time period that we are living in today. Different philosophies, sustainable development, etc. The Green Revolution. Folks, that's it. We're out of time for today. Hope you've enjoyed today's broadcast. I'll be back again tomorrow with our very special guest, Vicki Davis. Until then, good day.
Taking it back, one precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds of thousands of people every month. sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.